We're on the air. We have Schmichten.
Schmichten the collaborator.
Schmichten the collaborator. Should have a new show here, possibly. We'll see how he does. What do you want to talk today about, Schmichten?
How about collaborating?
All right. Let's.
Collaborating actually has a long history. It goes back about, 10,000 years. There was a fellow back in the Mesopotamian region of Mesopotamia named Argyle. And about 10,000 years ago, he invented a table. Now, everybody knows that you can tap on a table, but collaborating is a little different than just tapping on a table. You actually are knowing you're tapping on the table. There's different stages of learning to be a proficient collaborator. First, you got to start out by pondering. That's the first step. You become a ponderer. Mm-hmm. This means you've made contact with your thought stream. You're actually aware that you got a thought.
Who has a thought?
Yeah, well, the ponderer.
Oh, okay.
Before that, when you're a pre-ponderer, you don't really know your thinking.
I throw a little zen in there.
Okay. it pops right back out at that point. And then after you pondered for a while, you started getting a little proficient and realized that, hey, thoughts are real things. You can actually move them around, stuff like that, but you really don't have the proficiency. You're just kind of a proto-thinker at this time.
Uh-huh. You're a bit of a philosopher as well as an activist, right?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really a bit of an activist as well as a philosopher, I guess.
I saw you a lot at... I'd Occupy under a different name.
I was reborn.
Yeah.
Occupy forced me out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what's your political agenda?
My political agenda? I don't really have a political agenda. I'm tired of politics. I guess my agenda is avoid politics because it stresses me out and puts me into the proto-thinking phase again.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's see. Yeah, when you learn how to... I guess after you're a proto-thinker, then you learn how to think. And then get real proficient at thinking and able to throw out those thoughts and put those thoughts in and mess with other people's thoughts. Then you're a meta-programmer.
A little telepathy, yeah.
So that's what a collaborator is. He's a person who studies that kind of stuff.
You got to keep that mic right in front of your face.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Hey, you want to get a show here? You got to know these things.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you see here to the
details.
Cool edit, the spikes there. You want to keep those spikes good. And then see this thing right here.
That's my voice print?
Yeah, that's
right.
Sort of, or whatever. And then this thing right here, you want the lights to go right up to the line. You know, you go over the line, it starts distorting on the radio.
Oh, okay.
These three sliders here are the mics.
Oh, okay.
And this one here is for the computer, the Winamp, and the browser, YouTube, and stuff.
Oh, so for listening off of there.
Mm-hmm. And this is like a phone line, and I think this one's a phone line, too. I mean, I can't really read these because I'm kind of blind.
Okay, I see.
We do have a phone here. Let me open the other line. Forgot to do that. Okay, now both lines are open. Four two seven three seven seven two is the phone number here.
I guess I do have a bit of a political agenda. I'm something of a homeless activist, and I'm getting ready to. Mm-hmm. We're launching the rebellion on Christmas. It's the Christmas Day walkaway.
Walkaway? Are you walking away from the shelter?
From social services, codependency. They need us more than we need them. So it's
they've been cutting a lot of your services.
Well,
they cut the lockers. The lockers are gone. You can't get mail there. Well, it's $5 now to get mail, right?
Oh, really?
That's what I hear.
Well, they hired Monica to raise the money. Apparently, she can't do it. So.
Well, she has to make sure her salary keeps coming in, so she's got to cut your benefits.
That's right. You don't want to be, compassionate before you've taken care of all of your needs, and vacation needs, retirement needs, and then got to keep the homeless people on the street because the money stops coming in when they don't have any more needs. You got to play that game, and of course you have to inform the world that you're virtuous and. They give you some Golden Globe awards for.
I think she has her eyes on political office somewhere. I mean, she's
something. She's got dirt.
She's not doing it for the homeless. She's doing it to screw the homeless.
Well, it's $80,000 a year.
Yeah,
all you have to do is call the cops. They get rid of that guy. Get rid of that guy. Get rid of that guy.
I mean, how hard is it?
Not very hard. I mean,
she's supposed to raise money, but she's having to cut services because she wasn't very good at raising money, right?
No, well, she must be family connections. I mean, the girl went to Stanford, so that's not a free college. And then she got an $80,000 a year job after only a few years of working in L.A. And now, that's the big. $80,000 is not chicken feed. It's half off.
It's reasonable for this area, you know, but the police chief's retiring on $180,000 a year for doing nothing. That's more than the city spends on the homeless altogether. It's only
$160,000. Oh, yeah.
Oh, we have a call.
Oh, all right.
Free radio? Okay, let me put you on here. Can you hear me, caller?
Might be the wrong one.
Yes, we have a question, but your signal may have gone offline.
Oh, here we go. Now we have a question. I recognize this voice. It's someone disguising their voice.
Ah. The question is, do you need proto-thinkers, thinkers, or meta-programmers for an eco-village? Thank you very much.
Did you hear that? No, take it on air. We've got a ranter here. We've got a ranter on the line. Cool. We have a ranter in the studio.
Ranters are welcome.
And I can rant from a time to time, but I'll let you two go at it.
Okay. Is my question understood?
You wanted to know if the four types of collaborators were, if you could squeeze them into an eco-village.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. I'll take the answer off.
Don't go away. We might have questions for your caller. You can squeeze them all in. All types of collaborators are somewhat collapsible.
Collapsing collaborators?
Caller, you hung up.
Okay. See the slider? See, I had to do all these buttons up here, too, and now I have to push this back to red so some people can still call on that line. They were calling in on 469-3119. Apparently, someone else may call in on the regular number, or we'll see what happens.
Okay.
So you're talking about we were talking about the homeless thing, too.
Okay, we could do that.
So you were going to do a walk away from services.
I want to... you know, do the chant thing. We'll get the people together. At 3 o'clock Christmas Day, everybody go out and have your good meal and stuff. And then at 3 o'clock, we'll gather at Homeless Services Corporation's office. And
where's that?
That's on River Street, the River Street Shelter.
The 315 Coral is the shelter, isn't it?
Oh, well, they call that River Street Shelter also because the city has a River Street Shelter at 115 Coral. On that corner, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're going to gather there?
Yeah, the point is...
Do they have a Christmas meal there or anything?
Well, the days before, they might have some kind of slop they serve up that day, but I think most of the...
Some green slop.
Yeah, most of the big events will be at churches or civic centers, that. But let's see.
You're going to walk away? You're going to show up there at 3-something?
Well, show up at 3, and then that's when we're heading up to the Pogo Nip. I'm going to take the highest meadow up in the Pogo Nip, and I want to work with the city and work with the cops so they don't. If they can understand that if you leave us alone, just up here for the winter, leave us alone for the winter, and if you want to see if this thing is worth it or not, then all you have to do is look into your past years of the indigent medical health care cost for that same time period, and if we're not saving you money by getting off of the gray streets and you guys and the cops coming around waking us up and driving homeless people crazy, strange system, but that's how it works.
Uh-huh.
So if they just let people alone, then we can go up in the hills and we can chill. People started chilling at the Occupy encampment, but there was a lot of uncertainties and things like that. But the people who were the thugs around there, they realized that they weren't getting the recognition they needed through thuggery, that they actually had to behave in a different way, and they could get recognition for that. And there was some transition going on, but that wasn't a stable, continuous period. We had emotional interruptions that affected people's
behavior.
Yeah,
I know. Towards the end, it seemed that the camp seemed to be much more peaceful. I mean, I stopped hearing complaints about it in the GA. I guess they stopped policing it so much from the GA, and they just kind of let you guys take care of yourselves or something?
Well, I think what was happening, like at first you'd have one person, they'd come forward to pick up trash or something, and they'd look around, and they'd say, well, nobody else is helping. And then somebody else would step up, and they'd pick up some trash or something, they'd look around and say, nobody else is helping. But after a period of time, 25 or 30 people did that same process, and we began to see some of the same people coming up and picking up some trash or doing something, and they're really there was a workforce emerging, just a voluntary workforce.
I think something like that was happening. I mean, I didn't spend any time in the camp, but I did. You know, it did seem a lot peaceful when I was there towards the end. It seemed very peaceful, and the levees were like there was like hardly no homeless on the levees. Usually, they're all up and down the levees, and they were all in the camp.
Yeah, it was turned into a good situation. I think after a while, people weren't really... There was some fear at night when some people would go berserk or something. Mm-hmm. And there was some fear at times. But I think we were learning to adapt to that. And just simply being able to get enough sleep in a 24-hour cycle. You could sleep in the daytime, even if you got woke up at night. Mm-hmm. You could piece it together and actually get some rest. And this, of course, was...
Helped a lot. That might be a big factor.
It was. Our nervous systems were relaxing, and we weren't carrying loads every day. And we could drop the loads, catch up on rest, get good food that was provided by people from the community. There were benefits. And I think the business people believed that, too.
If there was nobody on the levees, that means there wasn't a bunch of people homeless downtown, you know, disturbing the merchants' commerce. You know, I'm surprised the merchants didn't get after the police for breaking up that camp.
Well, I think it was because of the robbery of the empty bank. When they broke in and tried to rob an empty bank, then that made all of us look bad.
Oh, those wacky
anarchists. They were getting that was retaliation for... that stupid blunder.
Yeah. I mean, they were looking to get rid of you anyways. I believe that.
That stupid blunder gave them everything, all the excuse, the justification they needed, and mm-hmm. they took advantage of it. But I think we can get away with it this time because I think the business people would like to see us out of the way, mm-hmm. and then we're actually going to have methods of dealing with people before we go into the situation. I want to make immediate contact with the mayor's office and the police chief. I want to sit down and talk to these people and say it's a lot cheaper to not drive us crazy. You
well,
will see
assistant
in 5 months.
The sheriff did not talk to Occupy, nor did Susan Morella talk to their assistants.
That's not correct. Don Lane, the incoming mayor, came.
Yeah, but he's just an assistant city councilman.
He's
the mayor now.
Rolling over him to his term, so he was coming.
But the county did not. None of the heads of county talked with Occupy.
Well, I'm not, our concern will be just city officials because we'll.
That I'm aware of.
Yeah, in the secret undisclosed location of the Poco Nip that we haven't talked about yet. But that's a city domain.
Now, I've never been to the Poco Nip, but isn't there trails all over the place? It's hard to find anybody there, right?
There's a big meadow out there.
Oh, then it'll be easy to find.
Yeah. It's the third and highest meadow. I think that's how it is.
Won't you be violating some kind of
probably
trespass? Or it's still within the city limits.
We do that every night anyway.
It'll be the regular
sleep
camping.
I'm illegal sleeping. If I cook a meal, I'm illegal cooking. It's simply illegal to drop out of the system.
To occupy. It's illegal to occupy land. Yeah. Although
you're occupying space and not paying rent there, buddy.
Although the inventor of the United States of America, the actual word, and whose books started it from being a mere tax rebellion to independence, Thomas Paine, said you have a natural right to occupy. You don't have a right to own property and exclude mm-hmm. others, but you have a natural right to occupy somewhere because you're as part of being born.
That is a fact.
They're trying to take that away in our modern society. It used to be you could sleep on the commons, no problem.
Mm. And the commons had also there was a commonwealth, which is something that's been taken away from us. Mm. What commonwealth taxpayer dollars have been forwarded to individual wealth, predatory capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
But this has collective capitalism. This is one of the things about our homeless effort is we will start businesses, a nonprofit business, several of them, one of which would be a thrift store.
Do you have a permit for that?
Well, we'll have to go through the permitting process and become a legal 501c3 nonprofit.
Oops, that costs a lot of money, doesn't it?
Well, it's you really
maybe you get a waiver.
You really can't build these eco villages without having money. There's just it's impossible. We're going to have to.
Where's the money going to come from?
The $2 billion a year allotment that goes toward the homelessness services industry already. So we're not
was that nationwide?
Yeah, about every year.
That money doesn't actually go to the homeless, as we said. That money goes to the Monica Lewinsky's. Those are just salaries for people that are connected to people.
Well, it does, but it doesn't have to. The reason they get it is because they fill out the forms, and we filled out the forms, we can get it.
It's because they have power and they know somebody. Well, it's just a scam that it's presented to the public.
It is the way it has been presented. I think the that a lot of these agencies are actually run by Republicans. These are business people, and you can make a lot of money in the nonprofit sector being a nonprofit business person. You don't really have to be a public benefit. You can be a private benefit, and there's very little oversight in the nonprofit sector.
Well, I just had a thought when you told me Republicans, if you call it a prison instead of a homeless encampment, you might actually get some money.
Well, I think Monica is, she's not a very, liberal-hearted person, open-minded person, very constricted, I thought. That's my experience with her. But
she speaks well.
She speaks well, but she doesn't speak well outside of her box. I would confront her with, how do you do this? How do you steal our money and sleep well? Hello, caller, wherever you are.
Hello? It's Robert again. All right.
My favorite caller. Hi, Robert again.
You want to get on the air, Robert?
Since you're also the only caller, you moved right to the top of the class there.
There you go. Did I say Lewinsky? Thanks, Robert.
Robert Lewinsky.
Well, that's just protect me from libel or slander. No, it's Monica Martinez.
She doesn't listen to this program.
Oh, but it's going to be archived. There will be evidence against us.
A lot of her career is going to be archived here coming up. Because, the journalists will come around. I want to have a media event for when the journalists show up. In fact, we'll call them and tell them we're having a media event. Here's one thing Robert might know. Hey, Robert.
He's off, but you've had events before. You've rented rooms at Loudon Nelson to deal with these topics. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I did. A few times I rented space at Loudon Nelson to have some meetings, and four people would come and two would walk out.
And much like free radio.
I only did that twice. Because nobody came anymore.
Is anyone there?
But again, something else that I think...
That was probably Monica.
Oh, okay. Lewinsky or the other one? Down on your knees, Monica. Not saying which one. No.
Careful.
Not saying which one. So it's you pick, ladies.
So where were we? Oh, yeah, you were talking about...
Bad, too.
The Loud Nelson, and you had some events talking about homeless issues.
Yes.
Poorly attended. Did you put out flyers?
Yeah, I did, but to tell you the truth, I was really behind on things. I was trying to move quick and didn't really have enough time for things to expand.
Just keep going while I...
But it did open up another opportunity. Figured out... I think what we can do there now is... raise funds showing movies there. Occupy could do that.
You want
too.
Me to push that number? All right, I'll push that number. Actually, it doesn't matter, but I'll give that number up. Okay, alrighty, bye. What?
I figured that. I'm ahead of you.
Okay, thank you. That's my co-host. She was telling me to advise people to call in on 469-3119 because someone else may be calling in. That way we can have two people on the line at the same time. I'm told that that's how that works. I've heard that it doesn't matter, but I've heard that it does matter. So 469-3119 if you want to call in. No one wants to call in, but at any rate, you were talking about, you see how easy it is to do a show here? You don't have to be very good at it.
Scatterbrains may apply.
It's really all about you donating your money to the rest of the collective so we can afford to rent here.
And have some fun and try to get the word out. Well, we get information leaks out there.
Well, I mean, there's a policy here that people in Santa Cruz that have a voice, no other voice, uh-huh, can come to free radio and be heard and have their voice sent out to the public. We provide an outlet, a freedom of speech that, you won't get on corporate. Mm. You get hushed at the GAs. That's one of the reasons I thought of you. You'll probably have fun on free radio because you can rant.
I appreciate this,
You can rant nonstop for an hour or two, I imagine.
I can, actually.
Yeah. To me, it's a problem. I need a guest, or I'm putting on music. Yeah.
It makes it easier. That's why I invented Schmickton's whole family.
You have a family.
The zoo crew, yeah.
You do voices?
Well, Schmickton will be joined by Bowser, my dog. Bowser will be here, and he's a good friend.
Is it a cute dog?
No, he's just a dog. He doesn't have a breed. In fact, he doesn't even have a body, but he'll be in the studio with me, along with my cat.
He's an unbodied dog.
Disembodied, yeah.
Disembodied dog. He's a dead dog? Yeah.
No, he hasn't actually been born yet.
Just in your imagination.
In an intermediate state, intermediate Bardo dog. Intermediate bar dog.
Bar dog.
And then have a cat there. The cat's name is a cat that doesn't have a name, but we call it Cat for short.
I see. Instead of kitty.
And then who else?
Do these animals speak at all?
The cat calls me up a lot, and I have a tendency to throw it out the window.
Oh, no, that's mean.
I know that. Well, it's a mean cat. It's actually a bitch. She...
dogs. You're getting it mixed up here.
No, this cat is a real bitch. The dog is cool, but this cat is, you know, cats call you up and things like that, and you're trying to read a newspaper or something, pet the cat. I had a cat like that, Clyde, and so I just decided that this cat is going to be part of the crew. We're located in the Hole in the Cave, 37, broadcasting from our studio in the Hole in the Cave, 37 feet below the subway station in beautiful downtown Washoe, New York. Population 285,000, and what's the other one? And it's the home of the Pirates.
The Pirates. Pirate Radio.
Yeah, we're located 37 feet below the subway station and to the left.
So you were also telling me you were thinking of renting some rooms at Loud Nelson on Fridays for another project.
Yeah, fundraising. We can raise money that way for the with homeless movies. Yeah.
Just movies by homeless?
No, just entertainment. I guess it does two things. Like on Friday after 2 o'clock, the rental of the classrooms at Loud Nelson are $13 an hour. So for $26, we can rent it for 2 hours, charge people $2 a head to come in and watch the movies, do that two times.
Now, if you get your normal four responses, you're going to be down $18.
Well, see, that was just a talk, and nobody would come to the talk. But they, for $2 on a Friday when the library is closed, they might come inside.
You have a plan. The library
inside.
Is closed.
Jeez,
on Fridays.
Senor.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, has been since I've been here this year.
I see. Year. So it's the homeless year, but the homeless don't really have $2 to see a movie.
Well, they can get it. Many of them can enough. Like especially in the beginning of the month, is maybe the last week.
Can you sleep during the movie?
Some people can. I fall asleep during movies. How about you? Never.
I don't know if you're homeless. I mean, a place to sleep is actually more important than a movie.
That's right. I might just come in there to get in and out of the rain. But
that's true.
Hopefully, the movies won't put him to sleep. Though I'm trying to have some good entertainment and give people a break to just to relax. And also, like I wouldn't be able to get people to come and hear the talk, but I can say these movies are brought to you by the Homeless Guardians, our organization, the front organization for this walkout and the films and other things that intend to do as the time goes by. But the let's see. So yeah, Homeless Guardians. I'm trying to build that organization, going to use the...
they have one of those.
That's the Homeless Garden Project.
Uh-huh.
But this is Homeless Guardians? G-U-A-R-D-I-A-N.
Guardians? Is this like,
Guardians,
you know,
like protectors.
Guardian angels or something?
Yeah, like protectors. We take care of our own. We'll just be all homeless people. And homeless people do take care of their own. We do.
I've noticed that.
Yeah. We almost
have to.
Yeah, we all know that we're poor, but when we share our stuff and it comes back around, we need each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll just make it formal and official. Look, we don't need the codependent out there professional compassionate caregivers at $80,000 a year. We don't need those people. We need ourselves, and we need our friends, our peers who are just like us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we gather ourselves together, we don't have to explain our lives to anybody. We understand we're this way, and that's just the way it is. And we understand you don't mess with a person who's just the way they are. You just, if they're too much anxiety, they're a little on edge, or a lot on edge, and they flip out for a minute. Usually we don't hit each other, but we do let people know, like, don't bother me. And mm-hmm. we also understand, I step back. I'm not bothering you, you know? Mm-hmm. And we don't fight that much. There's some who fight over and over, but most of us don't fight that much. Mm-hmm. Most of us actually go out of our way to avoid fights in very, very tense situations. People's lives are on the line. Mm-hmm. Last winter, one morning I came out of the woods up there at the university, and by the time I got...
you're giving away your sleeping spots there. Shh!
They were chasing me the other night, and I got cuts and stuff running from... But anyway, the police up there on campus. But anyway, I came out of the woods this one morning last year, and by the time I got down to catch the bus, my feet were already wet, and I'm standing there in the cold waiting. And then my body started getting really cold because my feet were wet, and it was still early in the morning, and I just kind of like went with this, was looking at it, and I could feel like this arisal of primal fear. It could feel in my stomach as the muscles started tensing up to start vibrating to produce heat and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
You're going to get hypothermia?
No, I think I was okay. I'm 10, 15 or more minutes or so till the bus came. But just for myself, as far as homeless people go.
What were you afraid of?
Well, it was not so much that I was afraid. It was just that the fear in anybody's human body when it begins to get cold. I was observing it. I was secure. I had a bus pass. Bus was going to be. It was running that day. I probably had some money or not. I get a check because I'm
now. This is even more crucial than sleep. The ability to stay warm because cold can kill you. I mean, you can go for days without food, weeks even, and you know days without water. But you know you can die overnight from the cold.
What was most impressive to me was this cold was like it causes tension. Here I was just starting to get cold, and this tension is building. Now, I'm only minutes into this, but this can go on for a person's body for mm-hmm. 4 or 5 months out of a 1 year, continuous, this kind of primal stress on the person's body, their nervous system. It cuts short the life. It mm-hmm. Distresses their minds. So this is what $2 billion a year handed over to the homeless services industry gets the taxpayers who fork over the money and also have to see the homeless people who are neglected by the people, the so-called self-appraised compassionate caregivers. I call them thieves and liars and killers because they do. They are like that. Mm-hmm. They go out and, hello, Mr. and Mrs. Wealthy. My name is so-and-so, and I'm the chief executive officer of this compassionate care organization. And if you give me money, I guarantee you that I'll put it to good use. But they don't tell what the good uses are, like plane tickets to get to the vacation spot, car rental when you get to the vacation spot. Right. You know,
90% of it goes to themselves, and maybe 10% trickles down.
Oh, you're
to
exaggerating.
The
it's only 88%.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, we get 12 cents out of every dollar.
You know,
but
I think
there's 300 of us, and there's 38 of them.
I think the churches do a better job myself.
I you know, charity isn't that great of a thing. When you get charity enough, it's actually a disgrace. Charity is for people in need of charity. After that, you have to start thinking, how do you help people without embarrassing them? Uh-huh. So I have no praise for people who are the greatest recipients of their altruism. Sometimes is them. There are many people who do give, like at these soup kitchens and other places, who really are generous. And I'm not criticizing them. My view of when I make these statements, everybody's going to have to weigh it on their own level. If your heart is really troubling you, I'm probably very right about what I'm saying when I'm speaking negatively about your activities. If your heart and mind are not very troubled, you're probably a rather innocent person. You really were not malevolent and probably were trying your very best. So I tip my hat to you. But if there's mental agitation when you think about this and you're really mad at me, I'm not the one to blame. For I have, and many of my friends have done very thorough analyses of our part in this in poverty. And, you know, am I lazy? No, I'm not a lazy person. I just want to be rewarded for my efforts, and a token wage for hard labor doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. My father was an accountant. He said, "Don't pay more than 25% of your income on rent." You got couples or each who now working couples, not just one parent paying 50% of their income. That's a 400% increase over what my father
years,
told me.
For years, and then the bank takes it away from them because they missed a few payments.
Yeah. And it was a rigged thing in the first place. They got to go.
Or the county red tags them, charges them huge fines, and takes it away from them that way too to pay their inflated pensions again.
No, real estate is that's the name of the game. If you control the real estate, you control what businesses sit on the real estate, and you control who gets the food.
That's why this show is Free the Land, because that land is our birthright. It is not to be owned by private people.
And so if us homeless persons, we step into this and we build one successful eco-village and we replicate that model, then we can build a successful sub-economy that rises from the bottom. We don't necessarily have to pull the top down. The top people are going to pull themselves down because they're greedy.
Well, I mean, the Diggers tried this in 1649. I mean, this is not anything new. The trouble is that the people that do own the land and make profit off the land will come in with arms and drive you off, just like the police, 90-some police, armed to the teeth, pushed you out of the park.
Well, that's public land. That was.
Oh, you're talking about buying some land, then.
That's right. That's right.
Participating in.
Yeah, but obeying all the rules so that if they attack us in any way, they have to change all the laws in the country affecting everybody.
I see. So you become more like everyone else in a sense, so they can't bust. But then they'll say public nuisance.
No.
They took a woman's house away from putting receivership up on Crystal Terrace last year. The city, Barisoni, our wonderful city attorney.
Well.
Because she was allowing the homeless to stay there. The rest of the neighborhood complained.
Oh. Yeah, this city, it's sad. I don't know how many people know this, but it has one of the worst reputations in the nation for its inhumanity to humanity.
And we're a progressive town?
Yeah, well, that's what they say. So what... I don't think it's the people of this county. I think what happens is there's a group of business people who wield a lot of power on where taxpayer dollars go, and they give the usual knee-jerk reaction to socially displeasing elements, and that's beat it to death, basically.
They don't like activists either.
Well, sometimes...
And you're the worst of both. You're a homeless and an activist.
Well, no, actually, maybe I'm a new kind of activist. Maybe I'm an activist who says the way to win the revolution is not by being poor and going up against the more powerful. Not necessarily. Maybe the way to win the revolution is run the revolution like you would a business, but just run a better business. You get your customers to come to you, and they'll leave the bad guys, and their greed is what will cause the bad guys to grow. See, when you go to, let's say, Whole Foods, which has about 30% of its cost is for stockholders. Okay, you go. And I was living in New Mexico, and there was a Whole Foods on one corner, and diagonally across was Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's doesn't have stockholder stuff. You can get the exact same Pacific almond milk in Trader Joe's for like $1.69, and you go over to Whole Foods, and you'd be paying another dollar. So 30% of your toilet paper or your tomatoes is for the stockholders. The cost that you pay for toilet paper or tomatoes is when you go into Safeway or another store, Whole Foods also, 30% of that is for a stockholder gain. In other words, you're not buying that. You're just giving the money to somebody who gave them the money, and they're paying back the interest on the money that was given. So we're eating paper, but we never get to taste it.
Cellulose.
They
add cellulose to some foods.
Well,
we literally do eat cardboard sometimes.
Well, see, having our
I shop at both those stores.
Having our own collective, so we could produce our own high quality agricultural products. Invite instruction from members of our local community.
So you'd be farming then?
Oh yeah, be involved in agriculture. Manufacturing, research and development, manufacturing, agriculture, importation, and we can go to trade shows and buy jewelry, electronics, fashions, and compete with the big guys.
So how would you start this?
As a 501c3 nonprofit. Oh, actually, starting not even as a 501c3 nonprofit.
Is there a way that you could just start this next week in any way?
Well, actually, we're in the process of starting it now as I am passing out the flyers. Well, I haven't actually made the flyers up yet, but I did make up the flyer, and I haven't made the copies of what I haven't done yet. But, I didn't even bring them.
No, that's okay.
I changed my
No one can see it
backpacks.
Anyways. We're an audio media.
You can hold up the computer.
You can give us the gist of it.
Yeah, anyway, so I got flyers. I'm going to run off the copies tomorrow and start spreading them out. So I guess this thing is on. I've never done it before, but others have done it, I think we can do it. I'm going to get right busy and get in contact with the mayor's office, and He sat on the, he sits on the board of directors at HSC. He reached out to Occupy when we had our basically homeless encampment over there. So I think he'll talk to us.
Sounds like he'll talk to you. But Robert and I were just talking about him before you came in, and he says he's going to do all this shit, but he votes the other way.
No, I don't know. I don't know, but any savvy politician, if they can see the economic benefits of just not having to pay out of city coffers for social services,
I told
there's
you,
a gain.
They only spend $160,000. It's nothing. They spend more on a retired fucking police chief who does nothing.
What if they didn't have to spend $160,000 at all?
They don't. I mean, they blow $500,000 a year on a fucking golf course. You know, they got the money to blow. They kind of. I think they like having, you know, scary homeless around so they get more money for police and more money for them and blame all their problems on them.
I don't know. You said they. Now
I'm talking about city government.
Well, even, like, if you said, when we say Washington, we're also talking about, like, Dennis Kucinich Barbara Boxer.
Right.
Which are not really bad people. They just happen to be in a bad element. So not all billionaires are bad people. Not all wealthy people are bad people.
Yeah, maybe you can get Soros to fund it or something. He does things like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, money doesn't make you bad. What makes you bad is the things we think and do. That's what makes us bad. I know homeless people, poor people, who are some of the greediest people you're ever going to meet. There is nothing that they will want you to have that they cannot. They're very, very bad people. And there are some very, very wealthy people. Ted Turner gave away $3 billion. A small man cannot do that. Ted Turner is a great man. Ted Turner owns his money. Some people are owned by their money.
Ah.
They can't live without... They can't make a decision that isn't influenced by their money.
Sounding philosophical there.
Yeah, well, Ted Turner can make a decision that actually influences other people's money. When he gave that money away, he said, "This is like a word of warning to the wealthy," and it kind of is. If you don't give it up nowadays, the people just might take it from you.
Come the revolution.
Well, the revolution doesn't have to be bloody and violent. Like I said, we can have economics is a weapon today. They use it. Economic sanctions. Iran said, if you impose economic sanctions against us, we will regard it as an act of war, and that's viable. Economics is a tool of warfare, and it's economic war that we're engaged in. So we should win it. Think to win, not think of ideology and cling to ideology and lose. Cling to reality and win. Hold to reality.
You're saying don't be dogmatic about your ideology because it might make you lose. Instead, be pragmatic.
That's right. You go into this thing without a preset conditions of how it must go and what it must look like in the end. You go in there with some flexibility. You know what you're looking at, and always know what you're looking at. Like, but be adaptable. Don't get locked into anything. Basically.
Mm-hmm. That's a good philosophy.
But my view on
I'm somewhat obsessive compulsive, but I've added flexibility. I'm obsessive compulsive about being flexible, so it kind of helps with the mental issue.
Well,
I'm saying I agree, but it puts you off track. You also have some spiritual interests as well.
Yeah, I do. That's actually where all this comes from. Here's a story. When I was a young man, I was on a spiritual quest, even a teenager. Since I was about 16, a young hippie, I turned on. They were talking about higher consciousness in those days, and I locked in. Been at it about 40 years now. But when I hit the road, I was influenced by Jesus and his statements like, see the flowers in the field, how they toil not, and the birds who don't worry about tomorrow. You know, so I thought of that.
Jesus was homeless.
That's exactly right. And also, I was being influenced by yogis and stuff like that. So there were the East Asian ascetics who influenced me. So you got Jesus, East Asian ascetics, and then older hippies who hit the road. And so I did, and I stuck at it. And actually, when I was 25, I encountered my psychedelic guru. And he encouraged me to stay on the streets. And prior to that, I'd actually had a pretty sentimental uh, sense of what compassion was. I was looking across the street at this schizophrenic homeless guy, and I really felt for him for about a second and a half, 2 seconds. I really felt for this guy, and I identified that sentiment as compassion.
Mm-hmm. That's what compassion is. Yeah,
because of the depth of the feeling.
When you put someone else ahead of yourself,
it wasn't even that perspective. It was just feeling him. I already felt that with my psychedelic guru. I already felt that even though that guy and me were both on the streets, because I had this spiritual connection with this guy, I had some protection, which he didn't. And so I had some sentiments in that regard.
What do you mean, from your guru? Protection in what way?
I just felt, had spiritual protection. You know, people pray to God for protection or whatever, pray to their teacher or whoever for protection.
Who was your guru?
Somebody you never heard of, and it wasn't even his real name. But
I never heard of that guy that didn't have a real name. Yeah.
But you heard of the name that he took. The name he took was Joe, and Joe was the way that we Americans were taught to say the Zhou dynasty in China, the Zhou dynasty. So Joe had was an adept. He was an adept psychedelicist and also an adept user of the I Ching. So he
still use the I Ching a lot, right?
Yeah, well, he influenced me several ways. He influenced me to stay on the streets, and I picked up the I Ching from him, and I continued to use that in about 40 years, 30
you're
years
an apprentice homeless person, right?
Yeah, I was.
I've trained for several years of spiritual practice to be homeless.
Well, in some sense, you know, I've kind of looked at
it. It didn't come easy.
I've kind of looked at this as a training, as a preparation, because I'd have these thoughts that actually, through my life, from a young hippie and studying astrology and stuff, I started having these ideas. These ideas, as I now look back on them, they have a continuum. My doing this project today, that Joe telling me at that time, he suggested that I should stay on the streets and be like an older brother to these other homeless people.
Mm.
And based upon that,
you're like the homeless bodhisattva.
Something like that. But I used to think that I was a bodhisattva. I would tell people even that. But I found out that I'm really not a bodhisattva. Bodhisattva actually has a stabilized their emotions. Mine are not under my control all the time. So I'm not really a bodhisattva. But I have bodhisattva aspiration.
Okay.
And
it can take lifetimes sometimes.
Yeah, they say about a trillion or so.
sometimes it's
just... incalculable number.
It just takes a...
Well, I think they
a
say...
A sudden change in outlook.
No, I think they say that it takes about 3 long kalpas to become a Buddha. And so, I don't know how long a kalpa is, but just to make
we're halfway between Buddhas right now. They come according to the Buddha every 5,000 years. And
no,
the
well...
The mid-50s was about 2,500 since the birth of the Buddha, so...
But...
The halfway Buddha is here right now.
Well, there's a lot of Buddhas.
It's a harmonic. Don't let me stop you. So you have a compassionate philosophy towards the other homeless?
At the Occupy, there was this woman there, a young woman. And she said that when she got there, prior to getting there, she was very depressed, she said. But then when she got there, she started finding ways to help other people, and it just really lifted her up.
Yeah.
And that made me think, like, in the past, I've also suffered, severe depression, bipolar.
Uh-huh.
I've had a nervous breakdown. I know psychology a lot from experience, you know.
I've lived it.
And so this woman, you know, based on her experience, her remark, I could relate to that, because I there was a point in my life when I was very depressed or something, and then I started helping other people, and I found that was really good medicine.
That's absolutely
and then and on
true.
That based on that experience, and in reading some other books, reading in some books and things, I encountered other people who had put forth the same notion that the best way to cure your own emotional and mental problems was to wait. This was my conclusion. The best way to get your mind off of your problems is to put your mind on the problems of others, and it will reward your heart and clear up your mind. So I get a lot of empowerment out of this. I use the I Ching a lot. It tells me what to do, and the spiritual benefits and protection that are coming into my life now that I'm finally in the right place after being in the wrong place and not being able to do what needs to be done. But now I'm here, and my life is just really opening up and because of this altruistic.
That's great. You know, Swedenborg said that he psychically went to heaven. He says, you know, there's not just one denomination there. There's people from all religions, but the thing they all have in common is they help each other. And, you know, Ernst? He was telling me it's like a dinner. In heaven and hell, it's the same dinner. And they each have these very, very long forks and spoons. So in heaven, they're feeding the person across the table, whereas in hell, they're just frustrated because they can't feed themselves.
Those are also, and some can be related to psychological states. Like, we can be in hellish states of mind.
Well, I was just pointing for the point being compassionate and helping other people, you know, really, is it kind of the point of existence?
Yeah, I think ultimately it is. When we, sages write of like selflessness. Mm-hmm. And when you're not thinking of yourself, you're thinking of other. And so the sense of self disappears. Well, I think, in fact, it's concern with self that causes all these, our thoughts to get real neurotic because we're always worried about ourselves. What's my future? What's this? What's that? And stuff. But when you just kind of look around that person's need or look out and say, that's a beautiful tree, and then look out, not at yourself, but at things that are out there that are worth looking at.
This is the complete opposite of what, you know, the conservatives or the Republicans in power. They want you just looking out for yourselves, forget about the poor and the disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. You know, fuck them. They fucked up. They made the wrong choices. Mm-hmm. Make sure you don't make the wrong choices. These survival TV shows all puts forth that just look out for number one. You know, fuck everybody else. You know, our society has moved more and more over the past few decades in that direction. I believe it's because of these, you know, wealth monger, the things, the 1%, essentially, because that keeps us all struggling and fighting against each other instead of uniting against the 1%.
Some of the wealthy people in the last decade.
I know, some of them are okay.
Nice people.
But there's a lot more bad apples than good apples.
I don't think so. I think what people do is they respond to the influences in their environment to get their kudos, right. So to say. Yeah. Like if you're a gangster and you're born, let's say if you're born in a barrio and everybody around you is doing things like, you know, thumping people over the head or stealing or something like that, and somebody said, hey man, you did good, you know, you stole this and you got away with it, and you will think, okay, cool, you know, they like me, and so you go out and do other things so they'll like you. It doesn't, but nobody is telling you, like, if you do things that are hurtful, that actually the karma will come back and it'll get you. But if you do things that are positive, then karma will come back and it'll get you in the positive way. But nobody's explaining these simple things, like, this is where Buddhism starts. It starts with karma and reincarnation. So when we come into this life, what we're doing is we're carrying the baggage over from the previous lives. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily just the past, but it's impressions made very, 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 very long time ago can ripen in our current environment. Like, say, let's say somebody comes into a room, you never met him before, but you just don't like him. There's some kind of gut instinct, I don't like this person, and I don't know what I'm going to do, but I just can't stand him. Some people say, well, that's a karmic connection at work there, and that's past lifetimes. And so there is a deal that has to be worked out there. There's a karmic debt to be paid by one person or another. You hate that person because they did you wrong, or they want to collect in their psyche. The psyches, when they get reduced to more subtle and subtle and subtle stuff, and they move from personal into transpersonal and collective and stuff, the communication at those high levels is closer. So you really have to watch your thoughts. You can, if you're going into an environment where people are really kind of intuitive, and you know, like a meditation center where people live and practice a lot, like people there will be really sensitive to subtle mental impressions because they spend a lot of time observing their minds. Their minds are not just limited to their heads. Often, in fact, they say that their minds are actually located in their hearts. So, but if you come in if you're approaching the place with points of feelings toward these people, those impressions kind of are made and they sort of reverberate with the pebble in the pond kind of thing. And they do make impressions on other people's minds, even across the universe or around the planet. I think that the minds are that closely connected. Mm-hmm. The perception of my mind and your mind are really probably more imaginings than factual when looked at it from higher.
Well, there's recent research that says consciousness is a wave phenomenon in the brain, and waves leak out of the brain. So, yeah, they're interacting with other people.
Yeah, we
just
are.
Like a radio.
That's right. You and I are having verbal communication, but there's also other things going on. There's mind communication.
Mm-hmm.
And when people stop talking, their brains are still communicating.
And if you'd like to communicate with Free Radio Santa Cruz, you can call us right now at 469-3119.
And you can also send free money.
That's right. We're running out of money here.
Uh-huh. So you can run it up. You can run up the money and
you can
help,
make a donation.
Help the world.
Look on the website. I can't remember how to do the donation stuff. Let's see. You could. What I like to see is more people come on and have their own shows and get more people from Santa Cruz doing live shows instead of canned shows from elsewhere. And it's $30 a month.
Wow.
$10 off if you attend a meeting.
Wow.
And although in your case, the way you kind of ran on at the meeting, I think we might make it, you get $20 and $10 more if you attend the meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, there's other...
Just having a joke there at your expense.
As usual, I'm used to it. But I really, you encouraged me to do this free.
Well, that's how, you know, I'm not going to stand on Pacific and try and raise money and get a $250 ticket.
No, I'm not.
I will encourage, I mean, like
you
I said.
You get the radio.
Yeah, there is a policy here to giving people a voice, and you seem to have a unique voice, and, you know, it wasn't being met elsewhere, and I think you have a reliable source of income, so... I think you'll probably be a reliable DJ.
Plus, and also I get...
And you can go on and on and on, so you can fill up the time.
Well, we'd go to those Occupy things, we talked about Occupy and how they kept on drowning me out because I'm like a dissident's dissident. There was a trend like, hey, let's go attack that wall and rub our noses up against that wall and see if it will obey our will. And I was trying to tell people, no, man, let's go for aesthetic appeal. Let's turn that village into something that will please these people that or the homeless encampment. I said, let's put a reed fence around that and go for aesthetics and impress these people in a positive way. Work with it.
You were one of the fence guys?
Well, yeah.
But you wanted to put the fence around the whole encampment, right?
Well, we needed that. We had to regulate who was there so we could regulate behaviors in the thing.
And that's what I felt, too. And there were some people that wanted to do it and other people that didn't.
You know, I was telling this to one of the manipulators or the facilitator. Well, this was a manipulator. He wasn't a guy. He was a... But he was a manipulator, and I was telling him we need to regulate this, and the guy got really threatening toward me. I told him, man, I'm serious. We were just over in the tent. It wasn't at a GA meeting or in the tent area. And he got really threatening toward me because I said, we need to regulate this, and he came up with the intelligent, apropos remark to my description. Where are you from? I was speaking to somebody about intellectual stuff. You want to know where I'm from, huh? And the tone tells me that you're kind of threatening. And then he asks his next intelligent and relevant question to like camp security and all this stuff was, what's your name? And which point I tell him, man, you scare me, dude. You're really getting threatening. I feel physical fear from you. I got to get away from you. But he's one of the facilitators and one of the people who, one of the militant leaders of the nonviolent Occupy movement. So now I'll get this radio
program.
Not
so nonviolent.
I'll get this radio program. They wouldn't let me speak there because, like I said, I'm kind of a dissident's dissident.
I was at the Sunday meeting. I was looking around. Who would I like to see on the radio? Oh, he's not. His voice isn't getting heard. And there's somebody else. Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that because now I get to tell my side of the story. So they blocked me out, up there on where they do their some of these guys do their grandstanding and little else besides go try to rob empty banks and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
We got General, what was his name? General Barney Fife, whoever he was, he led the raid. I was thinking about how good of a general this guy is. He takes one of the militant. He's a militant companion. He is the one who took over as militant leader of the Occupy nonviolent peace movement or whatever. But here's his battle, his war record, as far as I know. He took 30 people, attacked an empty building, and had 200 casualties. 200. Now, most people couldn't do that. Couldn't produce 200 casualties out of 30 people. But this guy was one sharp cookie, I guess. He doesn't like.
Well,
he's probably going to have a fist fight over who's going to what kind of direction the peace movement is going to take. Have a fist fight with a guy.
I knew they were going to take over that building from day one. I mean, I used to joke about it. People were complaining about the location. I go, wait, you got a bank there, a bank there, a bank there, an abandoned bank there, and a courthouse and a jail. It's just perfect. Everything's right within reach for what's going to happen.
Yeah, but
not that I was advocating taking over the abandoned bank, but I just knew that's what. I mean, anarchist squat buildings. I assume it started in Europe where it's semi-legal, and, you know, so it's part of their whatever they do. I mean, I've noticed that about activists. You know, they have a certain thing they do. They stay within that framework. Creativity usually doesn't enter into it very much. Mm. They go with the tried and true, and because everybody else is doing it. It's the herd kind of instinct thing. I thought it was actually, you know, I cheered for him. Every time I walked by, I was like, what kind of pie, you know? Because it was just an abandoned building. I knew it would cause a repression.
That's the problem. See, it wasn't such a, you know.
But, I mean,
they have something called
too.
Liquid courage.
I mean, it's their revolution, too.
Well,
the part that bothers me is they didn't keep their masks on. So I'm hoping none of those people get, mainly I'm worried about those people getting busted. And secondly, they kind of tricked the rest of the Occupy with the march, used the march as a screen to get in there. And didn't tell the rest of that was going on.
You don't want leaders without integrity.
I
don't want a leader without integrity. I don't want the option of...
I'm informed that's a standard BlackRock procedure, is to use the rest of the demonstration as a screen to do your more...
To tell you the truth, I don't like people like that who want to use me. I don't want people like that who want to get me entangled in their warfare. I mean, here I am, I'm trying to do something positive.
And then
these cops come down.
I'm getting busted
because of these lunkheads.
Well,
they don't use their intelligence.
It was going to happen anyways. You know? Yeah, but they embarrassed the police big time.
Oh, they embarrassed themselves, too.
Well, no, I mean, seriously, they had, like, the very night they took it, there was a bunch of police there trying to take it back.
No, what are you talking about?
Oh, the 75 the River.
Uh-huh.
There was people inside, and then there was also people out on the sidewalk. So at one point, the police were surrounded, and the people on the sidewalk were starting to move in on the police. And all these brave police with all their riot gear were asking permission to leave at that point because they got scared because they were surrounded, you know. They were completely embarrassed. They spent $70,000 on that alone, and nothing came out of it. So, yeah, they took it out on the rest of the camp because that's what they could.
A normal person would call a terrible loss. Now, General Barney Fife is back, and he's once again tried to take over the GA. I'll tell you what, if it's their revolution, then maybe they should actually pick a nonviolent one that's actually nonviolent. Instead of saying that we're peaceful, why don't they either be peaceful or be gone? I mean, if you're going to lie to your friends and your peers and your companions, why should we stand with you? Tell me that, Generalissimo. Why don't you get your picture in the paper?
I think a lot of them also lie to themselves.
If you want to get your picture in the paper, Generalissimo, why don't you just go rob a bank? Why do you need to involve everybody else? I mean, here's my view. Did he do this for the peace? Does he work on behalf of the peace movement, or does he want the peace movement to work on his personal thing?
There was a subgroup consensus, I'm sure. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Well,
but I'm sure there was. There's no way you can get people, particularly anarchists, are not going to follow a leader. So there was. It wasn't just
anarchists
one person.
Follow leaders because their leaders are. That's part of their rhetoric. It's not part of their reality.
But I mean,
I'm a reality oriented person. I don't care for rhetoric. When they start shooting, when people start lying to me, I start looking at them. How stupid do you really think I am? I really become contemptuous of people who treat me like I'm really stupid, and they can get over on me. I just start looking at them, and I want to burn a hole through them with like my laser vision or something. Like, are you really that stupid that you think I'm that stupid? And then I started treating them just like you would a really stupid person.
Well, that was the other issue.
Because they are really stupid.
That was the other issue. Very divisive.
Lie to their friends and get them thrown in jail.
It was very, well, not just
get
you.
Get away from this guy.
I mean, you're kind of in the homeless faction. There was also a very liberal, moderate fraction that was very upset about 75 River.
Hey, so the people I saw really totally divided the whole thing. They didn't like it.
They totally divided the whole thing.
That's right.
And then later on, you know, they tried to put that.
It zeroed it out.
St. Paul's principles through where we get to use any diversity of tactics that we want, but you're not allowed to complain about it because that's divisive. Well, the fact that you're using
those
techniques.
St. Paul, I'd like to tell you something.
That
next time
city,
you use a
it's
tactic,
the city. It's, at least, it's the Twin
least
Cities.
Pick one that's going to work. If your tactic
and that was a very successful tactic.
It was not. They lost everything. Strategically, it was a blunder.
But tactically, it was very well executed.
Tactically, it was a felony crime of breaking and entering, which had nothing to do with taking somebody's, not letting people have freedom of speech. It was a breaking and entering. It was pointless. You can see the result. There is no way to justify it.
I'm not trying to justify it. You can get courage out of a bottle, but it's valor that you want. Their revolution too. So yeah.
Well, let me tell you about their revolution too. We can have another revolution. All right. If they want to have a revolution different from the nonviolent faction of this movement, let them go. Let the little anarchists go against the big fascists, and let's see who wins. And that way, that's cool with me because these guys are just going to make trouble. Every time they lose, they bolster the confidence of the cops. That means every time they go into action, they bolster the confidence of the cops, and the cops are going to come down heavier and heavier on the rest of us. Say, you're not pacifist. Well, some of us are. Well, how the hell are we going to tell the difference when some of you are throwing rocks? We're going to bust heads.
I have to completely agree strategically. I mean, back in the day, the FBI used to pay people to go into nonviolent protests to do that kind of activity so that they can therefore repress it justifiably. Because the real battle isn't over a piece of property. The real battle is in the hearts and minds of the public at large.
That's it. That's the battleground. Win their hearts, and you won the war without firing
and that's why
I bet you Sun Tzu says the greatest general never fights a battle.
That's exactly true.
And that's how you do it. You don't have to fight about it. There's, the kind of methods that we're using to progress social and political issues are so passe. They're lame. You show up at a peace demonstration, lay down on the sidewalk like that's going to change the world. That's not. Intelligence will change it, but playing dead won't. Like, there's something developing as social entrepreneurialism. We put our money where our mouth is. If Occupy is looking for a policy statement, all you have to do is do the things you've been doing for the last 40 years, but just bring them out into the public domain. If you want to build an eco-village, build an eco-village. Don't go breaking windows. You don't have to break into a bank. You don't have to have confrontations with cops to build an eco-village. You start a nonprofit. You get the people who are going to live on it out there on the land that you're going to buy with the money you raise.
Now, why do you need a nonprofit?
And
then, why can't you just do it without any kind of permit?
Well, you can just do it. It just won't work.
Why is the nonprofit essential? Because I know you keep bringing up the nonprofit, and that's Robert has said, because it takes a lot of money to do a nonprofit.
Let's say you're going to start with some very basic.
Free radio isn't a nonprofit. We just do it.
Well,
or they did it, and I just came along later.
Yeah, okay. and it could fold if
it's about to fold. If we don't get some money, so
get on the website, find out how to donate.
There's going to
be boredom.
Another tabling downtown on Saturday, the 24th of December. This is the 20th of December, by the way, in case you're hearing this taped. And they're going to have T-shirts for sale. They make an ideal gift for the radical in your family. Or, you can, if you know a free radio DJ, you can have them bring you to a meeting and you can get your own show. If you don't know a free radio DJ, go to the website and fill out the application. Oh, we have a phone call. Hello? Oh, it's only $200 to start a nonprofit. Well, there you go.
Well,
you can get $200.
Oh, I don't. Well, thank you for telling that. But
you probably just looked it up.
Well,
that's our researcher from the Tangerine Dream Team.
Okay, well, that's good to know. But
Yeah, come to think of it, I've known some pretty cheap nonprofits.
You asked the question, why do you need
a nonprofit? Why don't you start a nonprofit?
Well,
that's what you talk about. It's only $200.
Well, you have to do things constructively and in steps.
Wait a minute, that's a great idea.
If you try nailing the shingles down to the ground, you will have missed something if your intent was to build a house. So you actually have to do things in the right manner.
Well, now I'm getting excited. You start a nonprofit, A. Then you get insurance. That's more expensive. That's like $1,000 a year. But then all these people who got tickets at Occupy can work for your nonprofit and work off their court hour, community service.
What could do?
There's a huge labor force about to be unleashed on the community. And it could be working on a nonprofit to help the homeless and create a new community.
Well,
the opportunity is there. In fact,
let me try to answer your question.
Occupy had over 1,000 at one point. They could have started their own insurance and created the organization that they'll eventually have to work all their infractions and tickets off of.
You asked me a question.
I'm just getting excited.
Why have a nonprofit?
I don't like these people getting busted and going to jail or having to work off out or just wasting their time instead of a revolution. But if we had, like you say, a nonprofit that was concerned with social change, then they could work it off there and we could beat the system again.
Well, actually can. But you have to be practical about these things.
Hello? Hold on, let me put you on the air.
Okay, we're
Hello.
Caller? Can you hear me, callers?
Faintly.
I can never figure out which
faintly, he says.
Can you hear him?
Can you hear me?
Can
I
hear
you?
I can hear you,
yes.
Okay, good.
Okay, but I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Oh, hello.
You can still donate to free radio.
Wait, let's see.
Our friend from Los Angeles, from Iran. I'm having trouble. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but we call him Bruce.
That is correct. From the Caucasus. I'm the Caucasian.
No hate speech. That's another thing. You said a couple things. You said bitch earlier here. You're supposed to watch that. So the lines are open.
That cat's a bitch.
I'm telling you.
I'm sorry. What did you say, sir?
Even the non-profits are for profit.
That's sort of. It's salaries.
It is an exploitative system. That's really my...
And
go ahead.
I have actually lived in Los Angeles from Iran for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
Charging a fair price for my writing. Uh-huh. You know, all writers starve to death, but I know what my writing is worth,
uh-huh.
And so I charge money for it.
Sure.
Now, 70 million Chinese died under Mao,
mm-hmm.
until Deng Xiaoping said this is not the way to go. And communist China basically became a capitalist country. But it's not communism or capitalism. It is working and receiving a fair wage and having something to offer.
Okay.
I do a lot of working for nothing. Comment on world affairs and submit it to websites, and it goes everywhere,
mm-hmm.
all over the world.
Right.
Pakistani Defense carries my article.
Huh.
But you have to have some way of earning your keep.
Yeah. It enhances one's self-esteem.
And no matter how many tents, once I wrote that to go and picket Wells Fargo Bank is like picketing CVS because there is a pandemic of flu.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, good luck.
Hey, what does make sense to you in your view? What would be sensible? Or an example? Sir?
Some time ago, I had a friend in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go back and forth. And, I went to Monterey Peninsula College, and I studied Fresno and went to USC, and I got a PhD.
Hmm. In what area?
A friend of mine kind of belittled me because I had a business. Because I started a business in Los Angeles due to a number of different reasons. Why, first of all, I abhor academia. I think it's a prostitution. But to have a business, to wake up in the morning and have something to offer to people who need it and earn your keep is an honorable way of living.
That's right. People recognize that. Others do.
All right. So I am going to leave you with these thoughts. And if Santa Cruz is going to become the new Maoist state...
I hope not,
yeah.
These are anarchists. They're not communists. There's only about a dozen
Maoist
communists in town.
All of these are without meaning. You know, anything that ends with an IST, Maoist, capitalist, and...
Buddhist?
No meaning to it. You know, wake up. Wake up. Tomorrow morning, when you open your eyes, slap your face 60 times on each side of the face, slap yourself silly. Because this, you know, I mean, actually, you know, Santa Cruz serves a purpose in the larger scheme of things. You are the crazy. Uh-huh. And every totalitarian regime needs the crazy. And you're it.
Well, thank you.
Wait a minute here. How's business anyways?
Yeah, you and Dog Balls and Robert North and the homeless and what is it?
Well, these are issues,
you know,
of the day.
Hey, we're providing a service. You could send in a donation, you know.
From the face of the earth before Martha Reeves and the Vanillas could say, you know, talk it to me.
Now, wait a minute. We provide a service here. I mean, when was the last time you donated? Come on, buddy. You're making bank there writing those resumes.
I've been watching crap Italian movies all day. And now this is more Italian than anything I've seen.
Now, here's that hate speech. I mean, the lines are open. If anybody wants to complain about it.
I only have praise for you.
Did your business change over the depression here?
It changed.
I mean,
I've had this business for 25 years.
Yeah, it goes up and down, right?
Hey, do you know what social entrepreneurialism is?
Well, and I've been a social entrepreneur in the sense that I have worked since 1985 one-on-one with people in Los Angeles. And you may think that Los Angeles
is your business?
This evil, goddamn, fucked-up place where people... No. Outstanding human beings who work very hard to earn a living, and I have worked with them, I have helped them to get jobs, I have helped them to make their cases in writing.
Okay.
And I've basically been that.
Wait a minute, you've been doing really good in this economy because you write resumes.
I do write resumes.
So in a down economy, that's your up economy.
Listen to me. 3 years ago, I did well.
Well, that's not really what I mean by social entrepreneurialism. So that seems to benefit you and maybe your client. That's no different than in the business.
Social
entrepreneurialism is different.
He didn't say that. No, he's not.
Well, he's just regular. He's not a social entrepreneur. He's just an individual entrepreneur. Social entrepreneurialism are businesses that benefit the society in which they're situated.
Why don't I just give you my name and you can Google it
Why would I want to? What do you have to offer me?
Oh, now don't fight with the callers.
I'm not. I'm just asking the guy. What do you have to offer me?
This is one of our most loyal listeners. He listens there, you know.
It's good that you called in, but I don't know how much relevance it has to the things I'm interested in. I don't know how much.
Oh, no. I'm the only one who's listening to you in the entire world, and I'm irrelevant.
No, actually, we have one other listener out there.
No, actually, I think we're doing okay today.
Well, no, two other listeners.
Oh, my God.
Set a record.
He doesn't know.
They must be Bugs Bunny and the Holy Grail. So anyway, but you see, you have actually got a record tonight. And thought yourself into an impasse.
What's that?
Into an absurdity.
What?
He's disabled. Actually, he gets SSI.
Okay. Well, I didn't hear what you said. Something about
you have worked yourself into an absurdity.
Who, me? Me or
you? Yoon person who can't speak Farsi.
Are you talking to me?
Or French.
I'll tell you what, it's...
We provide a service here, and when's the last time you donated?
I'm going to tell you.
Get on that website and send in a donation.
This is my view here, sir. Forgive me, but you've not really been that interested in speaking with me. Thank you for your time.
I'm going to staff of light dumpster and take a piece of brown bread and donate it. Where's the son of...
Do you do comedy writing as well? Come on.
No, sir.
Admit it. You could.
I don't do comedy writing... I write comedy, which is, by the way, Comédie Française, comedy is not
you,
what
you know,
think
for 30 bucks a month,
it's
you can have your own radio program.
Comedy is seriousness. Don't confuse comedy with somberness. Comedy is actually the essence of wisdom.
Hey, you know, if I couldn't...
Which, by the way, doesn't exist in Santa Cruz.
Is that why Timothy Leary was calling himself a stand-up philosopher?
Are you calling us unwise here?
You see Santa Cruz, that's a hell house. That's a lunatic asylum.
Well, thank you, sir.
No. It's fully gentrified almost.
Well, Los Angeles is a city...
It's getting more and more.
The man lives in the city of angels. He knows what he's talking about.
And people who don't know whether they're on the east side of the United States or the west side. I've been there, man.
When was the last time you were here?
I was there, and I it was so long ago that I sat in a classroom where they talked about my ancestors and I smoked.
So, yeah, it's changed.
They gave me a free lunch. We walked under the pine trees, and I thought, my God, if I ever were to become a professor, this is the last goddamn fucking place I'd ever be.
Oh, you love Santa Cruz.
So that's the lunacy asylum. But then, you know, Santa Cruz is needed. It's a needed entity in the whole thing.
It's not what it used to be. A lot of those people had to move on when the rats through the ceiling.
I used to go to that place, the Catalyst. I used to go there with a lady named Jessica. She was a great girl. And, you know, that's when it still was real, when the Hell's Angels were there, and half of it was still a hotel. And... all the hippies and all those tough guys and everybody was there, and Jessica said that I look like Humphrey Bogart. And that was 40 years ago.
My goodness. How time flies.
She went on to become a school teacher in Mendocino, married a school teacher, has a child, and she was the love of my life. And I lost her. At the Catalyst.
You lost her?
Well, I lost her. I mean, Jessica Gresset, here I am, an Iranian. I come here in 1966. In 1967, I'm in the gym at Monterey Peninsula College, and they're expecting me to dance. And there is this lady, she puts on the cha-cha-cha. I don't know what the hell I am doing there. Are you with me?
I'm with
you. Yeah. So anyway, there was this skinny lady named Jessica, and I knew that she was the one for me. I'm 18 years old, now I'm 63, but back then I was 18 years old. It was the groovy 60s. I used to listen to KMBY and KDON and my AM radio, which I bought at Montemart on Fremont Boulevard in Monterey. So anyhow, so I was living a 60s dream. But then, because I felt transcendent, Jessica actually transferred from MPC to UC Santa Cruz, and then we kind of met a couple of times at the Catalyst and so on and so forth, and then we lost touch, and now she's been a teacher for 30 years in Mendocino. So this is life. There is no ism to this.
Life-ism?
Life, oh my God! No, Gunde-ism!
Life-ism,
yes.
As opposed to death-ism.
So this is the story, and I mean...
When was the last time you donated to Free Radio?
What am I doing right now? I'm creating original...
No, yeah, but we pay
you know,
to be
the
on the
radio,
show.
The radio that I'm creating right now.
I'm just teasing you. I'm just teasing you because you teased him about, you know, getting a job, which is what they yell at occupies
no, no,
the drive-by.
I've got a couple of old computers here. I'll send them to Robert North.
He can put them in the back of his car.
so he can further confuse himself. Now, no money will save you. No money will save me. I have lived in this country penniless. In Los Angeles, taking buses along Vermont. Oh, my God. You know, I wish I could come up there and start a school. The Santa Cruz School where is the lady, by the way?
My co-host, she hurt her ankle, so she's not in tonight.
She's not there tonight?
No, she hurt her ankle. But she's listening. She can
hear
you.
Oh, my God. She's a beautiful lady.
Oh, there you go.
She's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, she doesn't have any either. All right. Well, you know, I am. You know, this
Coralism.
Is exhausting. This counterculture is exhausting.
Hey, be thankful you're not going to jail like some of these other people.
I'm going to jail?
No, it's a lot of people from Occupy. You know, got
listen,
charges.
Listen, friend, going to jail in Santa Cruz is different from going to jail
in a big city. Yeah, that's true.
If you could, I've lived here since 1973, and I have very carefully. In fact, let me tell you something, which amazes most people. You know, I came to this country in 1966. Pardon moi. Went to MPC. I went to Fresno State. I attended school in Fresno, so you have to give respect for that. In 1973, I came to Los Angeles. This is 2011. I have never driven a car in my life.
Wow, in L.A.?
In L.A.
You got to be the only person doesn't have a car in L.A.
I do not have a car. I have never possessed a driver's license. And sometimes I stand on the corner of Westwood and Santa Monica, and I see these cars going this way, and I really wonder, how do these people do this? The sight of a single car frightens me to death. Because the gas that they burn overthrew the legitimate government of Iran.
Absolutely. It's all about
corrupted Saudi Arabia.
It's killing people in war. It's killing people when you run them over. And it's going to kill lot of people in the greenhouse effect.
That war on terror that is supposed to be about terror, which is about oil.
It's just about oil.
Has cost $5 trillion. Mm-hmm. $4 trillion in expenditure, $1 trillion in interest, and has cost a quarter of a million lives. And this is from the Eisenhower Center at Brown University. Google it. Brown University, Eisenhower Center. These are hard numbers. Hard numbers. So, and in fact, in the past 15 years, I haven't even been in a private car. God bless the city of
Santa Monica. That is really good.
They have buses. And I take these buses only twice a week, do my shopping, and I come back here and hide from the wall.
Well, you know, if everyone did that, the world would be a better place.
Well, thank you. Now I am the Ramakrishna of Santa Cruz, and I'll wear a dashiki and come there and start to gain followers.
Gotta have those.
Oh, you know it. They'll book me at UC Santa Cruz to have an hour of saying that this spirituality is what it is to do. Elevate yourself. You have been living in crud. Now, if you elevate yourself, okay. All right. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye. The Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3, freakradio.org. This is Tangerine Dream Team. Half of the team is wounded at home. That's why I got better numbers on my listeners. And
she called in.
She called in a couple times.
Does that count as one person each?
But I can see on the web what the listeners are. And I guess this is Free to Land. We're actually doing a demo here from a potential new DJ. He hasn't really used that much hate speech. Anybody wants to complain about any hate speech can call in at 469-3119.
Just the cat.
Yeah, it was another thing, but I'll let it slide. Whatever.
I don't want to say it. Can we say
it? No, I don't like to put too much attention on it.
Yeah.
If anyone, like I said, the lines are open if anyone's complaining. So, I got anything else on your mind? You look like you're getting ready to go. Did that guy upset you a little bit?
I was just not really going anywhere.
We get so few callers here on Free the Land that we let people...
Well, make it interesting.
Well, he cracks some jokes. What was it? Where were we at here? Where were we at before?
He just hung up.
Yeah, but you seem to get a little upset because you're going to get calls, you know, and you're going to get
I like when I have conversation. I want information exchanged.
Well, I mean, you can cut people off or whatever, but just like I said, you so rarely get calls that part of what free radio is about is to let people have a voice, a true voice. So, I'll let people get on and rant. You know, actually, you're doing less ranting than I expected from you.
Well, my point is not to rant. See, when I go to that Occupy thing, I don't get a chance to speak.
You're not the only one. I've seen people have to force myself.
Yeah,
at least get on Stack.
To get 2 minutes.
I've seen people get on Stack and walk away because they didn't get called and because they weren't friends with the people running the Stack.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, I don't even. I kind of play with that system. When I want to communicate, I just talk. I don't care what's going on because they're not doing it. Well, what they talked about a lot was toilets, garbage, and encounters with billy clubs. That's like, we could do better than this.
You know, I got really upset when they kept going on about the homeless eating food and not participating. And when actually, X pointed out to me...
Every homeless person there participated because we gave cover to Occupy without any homeless people.
Hold them aside, it's just work for you. They're actually occupying, so that, anybody occupying is just as much right to the food as anyone else.
Yeah. Don't tell me anything.
That bothered me. And then later on, they got this big donation of $480 for food. And somebody comes up and goes, "Oh, we got plenty of food." All these other chains have been bitching about the homeless eating the food, and this is donated food from the public. It isn't something that they individually went out and bought. So I don't know. Got a little upset. No, we don't need food. We need tarps.
People have to actually sit down, discuss what they need, work out their priorities, and get those things, and set all the drivel aside, all the isms and ideologies, and you just talk about what you need, what's imminent. If you're going to build a house, you don't bicker about the wood. You just go get the wood.
It was still fun.
Need food, you just figure out how to optimize that resource.
Yeah, I just had to stop participating. I still watched and stuff, but I had to stop participating because I didn't want to, because it was the consensus. I had a feeling that I was partly responsible for that, too, and I didn't consent to that. And a lot of stuff happened, like the locks on the bathroom. I never saw that come up in a GA. A lot of things...
They had this... But a lot of the discussion...
A lot of the things that happened didn't go through the GA.
It's mediocre. It doesn't go anywhere. It's low level. It's 1846 to 1968. It's like, let's talk politics. Don't talk politics. Why don't you just talk about what you need to do? Don't get stuck in your ideology. What Occupy needed to do was make a favorable impression. They did it. They sat there and they talked mostly about politics. People are sick of politics. They want people who are going to make their lives better.
Yeah, but the
public
didn't know that.
So that's what you talk about. You talk about making a better world. You don't talk about anarchism versus fascism. No, there are other options. There really are.
There wasn't a lot of protesting either.
You can create a better world. You don't have to go and bang on bank buildings. There's some utility,
that's only part of it.
But,
That's, like I said, that didn't upset me quite as much as the moderates complaining about the home, doing a class war on the homeless, or the fact that there was very little protest against the banks. It only took four people to get a bank to shut their doors.
You know what?
With the amount of numbers, they could have shut every bank in Santa Cruz all day long. You know, I mean, they could have, and that would have been praiseworthy. They could have had some successes. The recent stuff they did with
it was all they needed.
Well, now the camp.
It was everything.
Yeah, I mean, from your
social
point of view,
problems.
That from your faction, that's what you liked.
Economic development.
The moderates liked the GA.
Demonstration of agricultural activities.
And the anarchists liked taking over the building. I mean, you know.
Well, that didn't achieve anything.
But it achieved something for them.
It got somebody.
It didn't
name
achieve.
In
it didn't
paper.
Work for you, but it achieved something
for
them.
It didn't work for 199 others either.
Right. But that camp wasn't really working for the anarchists.
Well, they weren't working it right.
I'm just saying. I mean, the thing is, it was
so you
it was
do
pulling
it right.
in a different
you don't get stuck
a variety
in your
of factions.
You get stuck in what people need.
A variety of factions
if you
that didn't get
what
along.
They need, you will
the moderates
better,
and the anarchists and the homeless
your
didn't get along.
As well. Do you understand that? Just like was referring to earlier, you deal with what the people need. Forget the politics. You deal with what the...
All right,
let
the
me
anarchists.
Finish. Let me finish. Right. I have a point worth making.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, you said give voice
well, this
to
is
the
your
voiceless.
Demo, anyway, so
voice
you can go on.
Voiceless,
yeah.
Okay? So let me make my point. If you just deal with what the people need, then you will be dealing with everything you need. You don't need to deal with political ideologies. People need to eat, so you figure out strategies to make sure that people have something to eat. People need to be warm, so you think about strategies that will keep people warm. You don't think about, is this consistent with my political ideology? Would I be deviating if I were to give them gloves? Would I be too liberal? Or if they weren't thick enough, then would I be too conservative? If it helps to keep their hands warm, then give them gloves. If the gloves wear out, then have another backup plan. We'll get better, bigger, or better—I mean, better or warmer gloves or something. So that's what you do. You just do what you need to do,
well,
and everything else is unimportant, and it doesn't take up so much time.
There's nothing stopping your faction from forming their own protest. In fact, that's
You're
what happened
exactly
a year
that's
before.
That's what I'm doing.
A year before, and which I didn't really
I wasn't
see
here,
that.
I wasn't,
okay, that's
I got
why I didn't
here
see it.
Only about a year and 10 days ago.
Okay, that's why. Yeah, because it was very similar. But
they didn't have a plan what to do. My idea is you get the people together and you employ them in their own salvation. That's my old plan.
Yeah,
spiritual as well as economic.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have an economic base.
That's why we have to have a non-profit. You answered your own question.
$200.
You could
start one next month.
That's not the point. Is not to pay out for the nonprofit. The point is to use the nonprofit to bring the money in. Forget the $200. That's step number one. What you want to do is take step number two.
What's step number two?
Bring the money in. Don't pay. Step number one is
how do you bring the money in?
Well, you take step number one. You pay the money out so you can get the IRS. Permission to take the money in. And then you take the money in the same manner a million organizations have been doing it for a lot of
years.
Well,
free radio, takes in money without being a nonprofit.
And free radio is hurting for money.
If free radio was
a nonprofit, then free radio wouldn't have to ask so much. It could have more.
They don't ask all that much.
There are nonprofit public radio stations that have larger listeners.
Well, they get government grants.
They go for that.
What's stopping you from doing that?
What's stopping?
What's stopping? Why haven't you already done?
Why aren't I a multi-billionaire?
I didn't say
success?
That. I just. But
why
I mean,
haven't I done everything?
Why don't you have the nonprofit bringing in the money?
Well, because basically I'm working alone. I've reached out to other people, but they're not. They are not doing. I haven't got the help I need. So I'm trying to do these things. I live outside.
What would it take to get you to get the help you need?
And other answers that I would answer if I had the time to answer.
I don't know. I have the same problem.
Well, what I think is going on in a lot of people that you and I know is a lot of people you and I know are not only under a high level of anxiety, but also get cranked up on caffeine and other stimulants. And we don't have the patience to listen to a person make a complete statement. So we have this kind of competition for airtime rather than having discussions. I really think that we need to slow down and have intelligent discussions rather than have battles over airtime, just to have a conversation.
Well, you'll have, you know, if you get your show, you'll have plenty of airtime.
Well, I will, and I want to kind of take the conversation up to higher levels, not just politics, but there's the whole human experience. And we need to deal with humans, not politicians. Politicians mm-hmm. can be very much like base animals. So let's deal with the human needs. A politician needs human needs also. You can't speak to their soul or speak to their heart. They can feel. Sometimes it's hard to make them feel, but there's some psychology that you can employ. So this is strategy to cause them not only to feel, but to say the words you want them to say. And they can never back out because they will have opened their mouth, put themselves in a position, and you can use them if you're smart. If you want to go up against a politician and he's got 400 cops standing behind him and billy clubs, and you go up against him, you're not very smart. But you could end up paraplegic.
Well, that's a professional politician. I mean,
that's also a very amateur politician who would go up against one politician with 400 cops standing behind him. Very amateurish.
Get things done with more than one person, there's always some politics involved.
Well, because you're dealing with policy.
Because you're dealing with people.
Well, you're dealing with politics.
That's what politics are all about, people. Getting other people to join together in a common cause and actually accomplish something.
Politics has more to do with policy.
Well, you're thinking of what's normally called politics, you know, professional politics.
But there's office politics, there's
family politics.
Well, I'm not taking this into too abstract of ways. I'm kind of looking backward to the origins of politics. I guess it goes back to, what is it, the Greek word polis or something?
Mm-hmm.
Like Acropolis. Acropolis, like the city on the hill. So you got a city on a hill, but you get polis in there.
City.
And you get word policy, you get word police. So police.
It's a group of people.
So policy. How are you going to govern the city? How are you going to govern? See, the city has people in it. It has water flowing through it, and there's mercantile activities. A city is not just a people. You can have people standing in a field, but it's not a polis.
That's true. Yeah.
And you don't need any policy.
It's a sustainable group of people.
Well, they can sustain it for as long as they can stand in the field. If it rains and gets cold, then whatever you're trying to sustain will just collapse. Mm-hmm. But in a city, you want the city to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You want the people in there to thrive. You want the water to be to flow and be worth drinking. You don't want to.
You have to bring goods in because the city cannot produce its own.
So you have to do all these things. So this is what it means to govern this human environment, a collective human environment.
Well, so even an encampment is like a small.
It needs policy.
You mean like five people or something?
Well, so some of these old cities didn't have very big populations.
Oh, no, they
couldn't. 5,000 people might have constituted for them a polis, a political entity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those were city states. it might have had 12,000 people in the whole state. You know?
The reason we can sustain much larger populations is because we're much better at doing the logistics of the water and the garbage and the food.
Are we really better?
Well, I mean, compared to those days.
Well, we can move massive amounts. I mean,
technology has helped us.
Maybe it's better or not better. That's kind of here and there. But, you're right. I guess.
Yeah.
So governance. How do you lead? What is a leader? What are the qualifications of a leader? I earlier made some comment about courage, but you can get courage out of a bottle, liquid courage. You can get drunk enough and go boldly do stupid things. But valor is what you want more than just courage. You want noble courage. So it's not enough to run up against a bunch of cops. That's not necessarily courage. It can be stupid courage, but blind courage, about as good as blind faith.
Well, it's part of the culture.
You can have valorous courage where you stand up.
Like sharing among the homeless, like the
Chinese guy who stood up for the tanks. Now he had valor.
My brother likes the guy with the shopping bag.
Yeah, that was valor. That wasn't blind courage or bottled courage. That guy, he had strength of character.
To me, that's a big strategic error. We never saw that guy again.
That tank turned.
He's probably dead.
He might. He might. You don't know that. He might.
He's in a prison cell somewhere.
Whatever happened to him, he made an impression on a lot of people in the world.
Because someone took a picture of it, filmed it, and snuck it out.
Courage.
They put it in their toilet ball cock thing because immediately the police were right on that hotel looking for anybody that took pictures, but somebody snuck it out. And that's a lot how Gandhi was successful, by getting it to the press. And that's actually been what's propelled Occupy as well. The pictures of the police pepper spraying people or beating them over the head or breaking their computers. We have to get that message out. And that's another thing that...
The cops are violent?
the truth.
What truth?
Who is running this polis and what kind of methods it is. The public doesn't know these things.
The city of Santa Cruz?
That's why Occupy had a lot of support in the beginning, because of that.
What?
Those pictures of the police in other cities repressing the protesters who were doing nothing but peacefully protesting. And those police were illegally violating their rights, committing crimes against the people that they get away with because they're police. And that's why the anarchists don't like the police. Maybe their methods...
people don't like police because
maybe their methods you don't agree with, but there's a logic to it.
I can understand the logic, but I tell you the truth, I think the black clad, you stay in the back until you're needed. You don't go out on the in the front looking for expeditions, as Kennedy said. Yeah, that thing, taking the bank, somebody said it was symbolic. Well, you can take a piece of paper and put a symbol on it. You don't have to do $30,000 in property damage. And like I say, have 200 casualties. We lost the tent.
I don't think property damage was ever intended.
When you broke the lock, you had to intend to do property damage.
There was no property damage at that point.
So what?
They didn't break the lock.
They made a symbolic gesture, and it caused. Like I say, if you want to make a symbolic gesture, get yourself a piece of paper and a pen.
Well,
leave the other people.
The difference between you and them, there was a group. You don't have a group.
They didn't have consensus either. They broke off.
It was an autonomous breakoff splinter group, yes. But it was a group. It wasn't just one person doing it.
General Barney Fife and some of his team are really, really strict on how that legislative thing they have. What do they call that? Their GA thing. They're really, really strict on the way it's supposed to go. They always get me on off topic and this little thing and that little thing. But then what did General Barney Fife do? General Barney Fife threw away the whole thing that he so strongly supported and was so sacred to him. He threw the whole thing away so he could get his name in the news or picture in the newspaper again. What a vain man! And the people who really were building the place up.
I know exactly what you're saying, but let me say it though.
If there are one or two listeners, they may not hear me. The people like who are very upset about this, Tom and Paul and Roxy, the sense I get is they didn't like the general, the anarchist, the militant wing of the nonviolent movement, pulling that push, kind of get these people who are actually good people and building the organization, spending their money and their energy, not to proselytize about let's have violent outcomes. They weren't proselytizing that. They were building an organization for the benefit of others. And then Barney Fife and his little group of kids, some of whom had to go to jail and threw away their college semester so he could get his name in the paper or picture in the paper again. Whoop-dee-doo. As far as I'm concerned, the guy is out. He's absolutely useless. He gets people in trouble, so everybody stay away from him. He might get you thrown in prison. You don't know about this guy. Okay. He's willing to use the whole movement for his own personal gain.
You're wrong. I mean, it's not just one person. He did not have that much power.
Then they, the militant wing, I don't want anything to do with those people. If they think that the militant wing, Occupy Santa Cruz, if Occupy Santa Cruz is a militant organization, I don't want anything to do with them.
Let's look at the other side of it. Someone told me this. What do you want to be remembered for? You know, taking over some abandoned property or somebody dying in the camp? There'd already been two overdoses in the camp.
I was aware of one. Yeah. But I don't know. What do I want to be remembered for? Well, what I tried to...
one way or the other.
I'll answer your question if you'll let me.
Okay.
All right. What I would like to be remembered for is the guy who said, let's take advantage of this opportunity and let's turn that into something. Let's put a reed fence around there, like I said, and let's give it aesthetic appeal so that when people walk by on the levee or the bike path up there, they'll look and say, hey, that's nice. So let's do aesthetic refinement. Okay, so that's what I want to be one thing.
The fence was brought up numerous times, and they would even dug the holes for it, but it didn't happen because other people opposed it.
Well, they had that consensus process. It's totally inept. Even Tom, last week he said it's hard to get anything done when you need a 90% consensus approval.
Wait, 90% consensus? I mean, why don't we just have 51% consensus? I mean, that's like I was saying about some people lie to themselves. It's not consensus. It's just a supermajority. But it's democracy. It's democracy.
My view is just
call it what you will. It's a form of democracy.
It's also, you know, the way I was treated, and such as that, and ignored. They shout out, "This is how democracy works." I'm more of the opinion, this is how mediocrity works.
That's the trouble with people's democracy. Only the most obvious things that everyone can agree with are going to get through a supermajority. That's why we have in our, like our Constitution requires a 75% majority in order to get, because we don't want the Constitution to change too much. To use that kind of a technique for social change to me is kind of a joke. I mean,
what kind of technique?
Consensus or supermajorities, they're designed to preserve the status quo, not for change.
I think that's way too much. A little bit more than 50. I was thinking like 53%. 51 is kind of iffy.
A consensus, but we got to call it consensus. We can't say it's voting or someone's going to get upset.
Well, consensus means you give your consent to?
It's a dogma thing. Like I said, they don't just lie to you, they lie to themselves.
Who?
Anarchists. It's not consensus.
It takes a certain amount of personal deception to say that there are no leaders while you're cultivating.
Consensus had nothing to do with traditional anarchism. You look in the old literature, in the Civil War in Spain, they used majorities. They didn't use consensus.
Yeah. Just be practical.
To my mind, the CIA did it. It's a conspiracy to slow down the left.
What?
Because, using consensus slows you down.
Oh, well, then don't use
it. Look at those meetings. They take forever.
If the CIA did it, then it...
That's just one of my theories.
Just move to something practical.
I'm a paranoid schizophrenic.
Just move to something practical. That's all. You don't have to be an ideologist. Just a practicalist.
There you go. But then again, you get that problem of how do you get a bunch of people together? One thing consensus is good for is if they all agree on it, then they've got buy-in and they're willing to do more work towards it.
Well, that's how you find out who your leaders are, but the people who step forward. If just anybody can wander up there and say and vote for this silly thing and that silly thing, that doesn't really empower you. But if you have people who are really participating in this, and they're doing things to actually promote the well-being of the whole group, and that's where you look for the leaders. This movement has some kind of, so it purports to have some kind of inability to deal with leaders, but leaders should be cultivated. We have no leaders.
And there were leaders.
Yeah.
There were leaders there, but they weren't.
They sure are.
Sure, there are.
And there are
anarchists
who keep on denying it. There are no leaders.
There's always someone who hijacks a meeting. In fact, I think meetings are a poor way to vote, actually. At least groupthink. You don't get the advantage of the wisdom of crowds by having a...
You don't necessarily get wisdom from crowds. You can get more wisdom from one person if the crowd will shut up.
Well, it depends on the person. Who chooses which person it is then, Sure, it'd be great if you put somebody who's a master at something. But nobody's a master at everything.
I know.
That's the problem with politics or government or any of it. There's all these competing things. If any system really worked great, we'd have it. The reason we have so many different systems is they all have their flaws.
I'll tell you something. When it comes with this project, my homeless project, building the sub-economy and all that, those people could ask me, "What do you think, Daryl?" But they never did. I gave my spiel. Two people there, three people have heard me in over 2 months. Three people have taken the time to listen to me.
Well, you got.
I haven't had the opportunity to spell it out here.
Well, it's falling off a little now, but at one point we had 9, which means we probably had 18 altogether, counting the radios too, which is not bad for free radio.
And then it can get archived and get downloads. Actually gotten into this topic, if we hadn't gotten into it, we could be talking about the creation of culture for the 21st century. We could be, because this is where it leads to. Well, collective capitalism, 21st century culture, tuning into natural, moving in accord with natural processes. There's a lot of depth to this. This is not a shallow topic that I'm introducing. I can speak on this for 2 hours easy. I'm serious. You'd have to have a person who could ask relevant questions just to keep me going. But I, Try. Ask me.
Well, we're already like almost an hour and a half. I don't want the tape to get too long. But yeah.
If you ask me any question relevant to homeless, and within this scope, I bet I can answer it. Within the context of the plan I have, which I've been saying, I got a plan and you guys don't. Within that context, I can address a lot of
social issues. You have an economic plan. What about the people that don't want to do anything?
They don't have to. It's all volunteer.
All right. What if they want to eat?
If they don't want to do anything, they have to find another place to eat.
Okay. So it's similar to, you know, capitalism.
No, this is collective capitalism. This is not predatory capitalism.
Okay.
We share the wealth. It's a common wealth, just like in the origins of
this. How about if they want somewhere to sleep?
Well, if we got a group of people and we got money coming in, why don't do you think that we should neglect having places to sleep? Have I not told you about the buildings that we would have? Would you like to me to spell those out? Spell that part out?
Well, I just mean, so is what if they don't want to contribute anything? They're still going to be allowed to sleep there?
Well, they don't have to contribute anything.
So they'll still be allowed to sleep without contributing?
Not in these villages.
They'll be kicked out.
There are steps you get to before you get into a village. You start from the streets and you get into a village if you earn that right. But if you don't want to do anything, you just want to be a wastrel and make a problem, we don't have any obligation to you. If you come in the door and you say, I need some help, we have an obligation to you. But if you come in the door and start messing the place up, our obligation ceases.
So you have a door. I mean, that's one of the... That was, like you said, the fence. That was one of the issues at Occupy and the one before. There are people come in and cause trouble. So so you're going to need some kind of police force to keep them out?
There will be some kind of security because it's practical.
Okay.
Only for that reason. Not because we're trying to build up a team of bullies. We're trying to have ordered lives, a well-ordered, harmonious, healthy lives where lots of people can share it together.
So that's one of the things Occupy was trying to do, too.
Well, a lot of people have tried to do it, but you have to have a plan. I have a plan. But nobody wants to hear it. This takes intelligent discussion. They're not in it. There are people there who are capable of intelligent discussion, but you had to dummy it down. You had to bring it to the level where the lowest common denominator could feel included.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
might mean excluding the highest uncommon denominator.
Mm-hmm.
People get bored with no movement. But at least you had a low level of discussion. They could vote on unimportant things and make it, and they could polish their whole style. But you didn't have to be productive. To begin with, the very first meeting I went to of Occupy, it was called Strategy and Philosophy, or Philosophy and Strategy. So went over there. There were 26 people that showed up. The thing went on for about 3 hours. But what the whole topic concerned was a mission statement. And it did. They were working on a mission statement. They had 4 different versions of mission statements. They were working on voting on different versions of the mission statements. I think they were working on voting on whether or not they should vote on the mission statement.
But that group disbanded after that meeting.
It did.
Yeah.
But,
and then another mission statement group.
There were some people who came in, and they were making practical comments, like most mission statements are only a quarter of a page, or about one paragraph. This one was 1.25 pages. But so you have to be practical.
Exactly.
You don't have to reinvent the mission statement. Just go with a simple thing.
Here's
something else that was silly. At the first meeting, they had 9 people, and everybody contributed 5 words. So you had to have 45 words in the mission statement. You didn't have to have a statement of what you're doing. You had to satisfy everybody with 5 words. Couldn't settle for 3 or 1 or 9 or just a little package that seemed right. But at one point, I asked the guy, how many hours have you put into this so far? He said 60 hours on a mission statement. And they probably went up to 100. And when they were done, Ed read it. And it was 1 paragraph long. I and 1 other person at that first meeting said, that's usually about how long they are. It took them several weeks, over 100 hours of meetings, to write a quarter-page mission statement.
All right, to clarify here, the one you're talking about, that group disbanded, and another working group was formed just on the mission statement.
Nonetheless, Occupy
spent 100 hours. And I attended a couple of those meetings.
100 hours trying to write a mission statement.
Well, it's important.
That's,
Sort of. Everyone ignored it.
They didn't dedicate 100 hours to fixing up that camp. That was important. One person in 15 minutes could have written a satisfactory mission statement.
You're preaching to the choir. Yeah, I believe wasting your time in meetings is of no avail.
400 times more necessary if only one person had did it. But they involved 26 people. So 26 people times 300 times
right,
3 hours is 78 hours
ended.
On the first meeting.
The mission statement group was smaller after that. So they, like I said, I facilitated.
They got 1,000 man hours into writing a quarter page.
There were still people that wanted to do over a page on that one. And I tell
them,
it's not going to pass the GA. Just think about that. It's got to be short enough to pass the GA. And I pushed, and then at one point they were saying, well, solidarity with the other occupiers. Everybody agreed to that except one person. He blocked. We dealt with the block, and we put it in the preamble. But eventually, they did come out with one. It was like seven. They agreed on seven sentences, and all the specific stuff kept getting knocked down, and they kind of made it vague and alluded to the points, and they actually came out with a reasonable one that sailed right through the GA. Everyone was fucking surprised.
Yeah, they read it one time, put it away, and nobody has seen it.
Yeah, and what good was it after that?
100 hours. What? Okay, we got 400 man hours. Seven sentences. And the people are over there saying, pleading for everything we needed. We needed a practical plan for getting rid of the garbage. They didn't want a practical plan. I tried to introduce the idea of having...
Tom only had one. You could have joined Tom's working group.
I wasn't in a working group. I just simply picked up trash because I saw it was sitting there and it seemed like a good idea. And other people did the same. I appreciate what Tom did. And he is one that I'm speaking for, but the general blew it for him. General Barney Fife blew it for Tom and Roxy and Paul, who was there at the beginning at the camp, because, well, the camp got shut down. He blew it for 200 people. He blew it for me. He blew it for my neighbors. He blew it for the 60 or so people that would show up when we were having people show up and money was coming in. He blew it. He led the charge and blew it for the rest of us. I have no respect for him. Since he tried so hard to keep me from speaking, I now have my chance to speak, and I'm going to tell people what an inept leader that guy is. He blew it.
He's a friend of mine. I went off on him once at the Occupy a few days before I left. And then security rushed up, and I was just laughing because we're old friends.
You might be. I don't know the guy. But what I get is,
well, the thing
this
is,
guy's a big egotist.
Well, the thing,
I didn't see him making a sacrifice for anybody else.
Every person there had their own agenda.
Mm. Okay, granted. But what? How would you prioritize agendas? What's most important?
The thing is, I mean,
what is the thing that's most important?
The more charismatic people are going to get more people to follow.
So the most important thing is charisma.
No, I didn't say that.
You did. I asked you a question. No, you answered it with charisma.
I said that's a practical reality. That's what happens.
That wasn't the question. You were asked a question. If you're not answering a question, you're not having a really...
If the wisest people were running this world, we wouldn't be in the mess we are today. The trouble is...
Listen, let's back up. What are the priorities?
For what?
You got the encampment there. You got the people. Is it one person's charisma that has priority over the 200 different agendas that other people have? You got 200 different agendas. What has priority? What is the most important thing to everybody?
It all comes down to who has the most power. It always does.
Okay, so power, charisma is not.
I didn't say it's a priority.
Now it's power that's the most important priority.
Well, that's one of the ways.
Power is most
wealth. The reason the 1% are wanting this country is because of wealth.
Okay, so we have three of the most important priorities.
They're not
charisma.
Priorities.
Well, I'm trying to attack a problem. I'm not trying to have a wide.
What's your goal?
To solve problems.
What problem?
Whatever problem comes up.
All right,
have a method.
There's different solutions for each problem.
No, there's one solution for each problem.
Yes, there is. It's the appropriate one.
Anything other than an appropriate solution
will
not work.
Who says what's the solution?
It's the appropriate one.
Who defines the appropriate solution? That's the thing. Everybody's got their own idea about what the solution is.
Forget people's ideas. What works?
That's what I was trying to say, but you were cutting me off.
Let me ask you, so if you have a problem, let's say you have a flat tire in your car, is that and you consider that to be a problem. Would the answer be to call somebody with charisma?
As I said, we're talking about political. What do you do about the 1%? What are you going to do about the 1%? What are you going to do about the problem that we don't have control over our own lives? What's your solution to that?
To solve problems as they arise.
But you know, you didn't solve the problem of the camp.
I tried. I have a plan.
That's what I'm saying.
So I'll just have
so
to
you didn't have a solution that worked. That's the other thing. You have to have a solution that actually works.
I have
just having an idea is not enough.
There's enough.
And you're talking to a guy who is an idea guy. I very well feel your pain.
Maybe you're wrong. I'll address your question.
Maybe you're wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. You never know. It's very difficult. Politics are a problem. How do you solve the problem of politics?
I've answered your
question. How do you solve the problem of war? Why do we continue to have war?
Well, I don't know. You can keep on asking questions, and I can keep on giving you answers, but if you don't ask if the next statement is not a relevant question or a relevant response to the previous answer, then you might as well travel the world throwing pins at various cities because you're not going to accomplish anything else. You're not looking for answers. You're looking for questions. In this discussion, you're not looking for solutions. You're looking for the next problem. You haven't solved the previous problem. Somebody offers you the first step and trying to solve that problem, you're off looking for another problem. Why don't you solve one problem?
Well, you have
a
problem.
What's that?
Getting your agenda across. You're not getting across.
Well,
are you?
Actually, I am solving problems. I am solving problems. You gave me the opportunity to get my voice is not getting heard. I'll just surround the people who are closing me off, and I'll get my voice out to more people than they can. Like they can stand there in the cold and grandstand. I'll come in here and I'll announce to whoever would it be interested. My whole idea, my whole of my ideas, and I can add on to them week to week to week. And pretty soon people are going to say, this guy actually has some pragmatic approaches to addressing problems, and he even will allow us to ask him questions and make an effort to answer the question that we ask. That's the kind of guy you got sitting here. I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to raise the next problem just because you raised a question. I'll try to answer your question. Hit me. I told you, do it earlier. Do it again. Devil's advocates, please call in. I can. This is a good plan. I'm challenging you. To stump me. But we've been here for an hour and a half and you don't even know what my platform is because we're not really having an intelligent conversation yet. We've had minutes of it. I'm serious, Bree. Yesterday when you
that's your problem right now. How do you solve that problem?
You and I talked, I said, this is it, man. We're really hitting it. We're hitting a high level of conversation. Let's get into that. Let's make this a sophisticated and intelligent discussion on problem solving issues relevant to our life today in this country and the world. Let's talk about these
things.
Well,
I have to take the other side on some issues because nobody's here to defend themselves, so I have to defend them a little bit. And the devil's advocate, as you said.
You're defending everything except the...
that's a way for you to articulate.
Whatever it takes. You're not defending the need to be intelligent about this. You're going all over the board. I'm trying to draw you in. Let's have an intelligent discussion and tackle problems. I'm serious. I'm not trying to... I'm not insulting you. I don't think you're unintelligent. I think you're very intelligent, and I'm trying very hard to draw it out of you. And the same is true of that group that would gather out there. There's some very intelligent, very kind-hearted
people. That's exactly
right. But they're kept on the level of mediocrity. There are no leaders who can take them. They will not allow leaders who can take them to a higher level of discussion. They're stuck in dog-eat-dog politics because a General Barney Fife has taken over the Occupy movement. The militant faction took over the nonviolent Occupy Santa Cruz.
Somebody's always going to try and take it over.
Well, stop giving them the permission to do so. Say it's wrong. Say you.
That's why I left. I just
because it was wrong.
No, cause it was I got hijacked.
Was that okay with
no,
you?
Yeah, because it's
okay.
Hypocrisy. No, I didn't like it.
Oh, that's a democracy to hijack things. So you're saying George Bush, that for him
what
to steal
two
elections.
What can I do about George Bush?
You just gave,
George Bush is wrong.
Him credence. No, he's right because this is the way it works. If it's okay for General Barney Fife to do it,
And I didn't say
you
it was right.
So you said it was okay. It's democracy. It's the way it works. And you that
yeah,
means,
I
that
told you I had a fight with him.
By precedent, you say it's okay for George Bush.
I told you I had a big fight with him and said it was wrong. But did that solve it? No.
Well, it's not solved. But in talking to some of the other people who I think are more have duly earned their right to be leaders, and rather than manipulators like him, and that censor, the censor lady, whatever, not lady, that censor woman who doesn't want me to speak. She's a KSBW journalist, film journalist was there, and just about to ask me questions. She comes up and tells me not to talk to the camera person. I can give a better answer than she can.
There's a lot of censorship going on the website, too.
I know, there's a lot of hypocrisy over there, and I'm attacking those people. Yeah. I'm attacking the general who has treasured this consensus system. Oh, man, he protects that as if it was his only child. Unless he feels like abusing that child and getting some other college children to go break into a bank and face criminal charges. Some of these kids went to jail because of this guy's ambitions. That man's ambitions ruined our movement, our socio-political movement.
You're giving him way too much credit. Like I said, it's not just him.
No, I'm not.
Well, it's not just him that wanted to do that. No.
You cut off the
head,
you kill the body.
Nope. Had he not been there, that bank still would have been taken over, I guarantee you.
By who?
I guarantee you.
By who?
By the people that took it over. It wasn't just him. He was along for the ride.
Who? There
were several.
You're saying that he wasn't a leader in that?
Yeah, exactly right.
But he wasn't pushing for it?
There's probably several. I don't know. I wasn't there.
There were no leaders. They just somehow came up, all moving in the same direction, as if a spirit had moved over there through their minds and says, the spirit whispered into their ears independently, you guys go over there, stand on that corner, and go up the street together and take over that building. Because
they
don't have any leaders except for the divine spirit of anarchistic inspiration.
They took over the a building in Oakland. He wasn't there. He had nothing to do with that.
That
happened before the bank happened.
What was the results of that?
Yeah, it's the same thing. People got upset. But they were still able to stop the ports.
I
really approve of that.
The first time, I was pretty impressed by that. The second time, the press was writing that they sent the workers home and it cost the workers money. Now, I never found out what the workers' opinion of losing money for that day was, because my understanding is that there's some kind of a strike going on between these workers and some of the dock managers or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So without all that information about where the workers stand, I don't really have a point yet. The press was kind of pitching to the tune of, oh, it costs these people money, just like they were pitching the little thing. Oh, there's trash and poop and stuff like that. We have to stop this. We have to stop this political movement because they have litter. You know, so I don't know what they're really doing with that. The workers, you know, they sent the workers home. Well, the workers might have got paid that day too.
You know? I heard that a lot of the workers supported it.
Yeah, it seems so. If anybody's willing to back your strike, and when Bush was president, they weren't allowed to strike. Remember that? They went on strike, and Bush said, "Oh, you guys have to go back to work." You know? And they went back to work. But then, at the same time, they had these energy blackouts rolling through California. Bush didn't. He said, "Well, we'll just let the marketplace."
He was
work.
Making money off
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we'll
one.
Let the marketplace work that out. We don't have any right to intervene, but we have a right to intervene when the workers go on strike.
The hypocrisy up and down politics. It's all about where you stand depends on where you sit.
Okay. Well, we have hypocrisy in Occupy Santa Cruz, but. But what
city
I'm,
government,
what
county I'm, government?
Well, that's right.
Littered with
but
hypocrisy.
We're supposed to be virtuous, right? We're
Who?
Supposed to be. Oh, Occupy Santa Cruz.
We get slammed in
we're
the
We're supposed
paper.
To be better than the other people, but we're not. So, because we're hypocrites, and we got militant leaders and divisive leaders and power grabbers, so that's why we have to change. We have to change ourselves. We have to critique ourselves. When I went to the meeting for this,
they don't want to hear a critique.
When I went to listen to this, I'm sorry, but yeah, you're right. They don't want criticism. But
it's okay for them to dissent, but don't dissent against the dissenters.
That's right. These are status quo dissenters. They are so ordinary in their dissension, that they're boring.
But the same thing applies everywhere. Same thing in a business. Don't say anything negative.
You know, one thing, when I was having the meeting, when you introduced me to the other members of this organization, and they were reading off a list of agenda items. And one of the agenda items was self-crit. So this group here who runs this, they already put that in there as a set part of their agenda. But like you said, they don't tolerate criticism up there. The people who run that don't tolerate.
I first got on Free Radio by criticizing the application process, and why should I have to get a permission to do illegal radio without a permit? You know, it seemed I protested, but they still let me in. They have integrity. With that, we have to cut this cord because we're running up on 9 o'clock. And we still need money down here. So if you want a show, you could get a show too. It's not hard. $30 a month, $10 off if you attend the meetings. Or you could just donate if you don't really feel shy or being on the air.
You speaking to me directly or the audience?
The audience. Uh-huh. I'm about to cut off. This is Tangerine Dream Team, the freelance section. And it's also a demo tape here for, what was your alias?
Schmichten, the collaborator.
Schmichten. Schmichten's demo. Thanks for listening.